the next 20 minutes or so run through a whole lot of point-of-care tests that are on the being used today or on the horizon, and then finish by sharing with you some of the lessons we learned from implementing some rapid syphilis tests for the last few years, and a final slide on the way forward. So as you know, when I first went to WHO, I was supposed to take over this STD diagnostics initiative because the WHO and many of the people who run STD control programs realize that the reason why they have such high burdens of STIs is that they don't have laboratories that could allow patients to be screened for infections or to be diagnosed. And so we actually held a meeting in 2001 in Geneva and asked countries as well as STD experts, what should our priority for rapid diagnostics going into the early days of 2000? And the conclusion is that we should concentrate on the curable STIs because for viral STIs, even if we have a diagnostic, it's unclear what we could do. And so these are our priorities, and we want to send the message to industry. We want the specimens to be as non-invasive as possible, as easy to do as possible, and it's mostly for screening and to support syndromic management. For chlamydia, gonorrhea, syndromic management has not worked as very well for vaginal discharge, so that was a major concern. Now, here in this meeting, as well in many meetings, you know, rapid tests and point-of-care tests being used interchangeably. And I just like to say that rapid, when you say a rapid test, a rapid is a characteristic of the test, whether it gives a result in 30 minutes, 5 minutes, or 2 hours. That's a characteristic of the test. But the being called a point-of-care test is actually a how you use the test. When people say, well, it's this particular brand of test, a point-of-care test, it depends. I mean, so on your left-hand side is a photograph from my friend who's a vet, and they said, well, you know, he said, this is a point-of-care test for us. It's very clunky. We're trying to diagnose an elephant with TB, suspected of having TB. So we have to bring an X-ray machine, and four people have to hold the elephant still enough for us to take a picture. Well, that's point-of-care for us. So it's not the strip test that you're thinking of. So let's get that clear. So we actually struggle at WHO with trying to figure out how to tell donors what we want, right? So in the end, I came up with this acronym at a donor meeting because I was tired of saying affordable, sensitive, specific, etc. And so this is actually what we wanted. And when we told industry that this is what we wanted to be the test to be very sensitive, very specific, very user-friendly, only a few steps, gives us a result in 30 minutes, and no equipment, and can be shipped to anywhere in the world. You know, people say, wait a minute, let me get this right. You want it to be cheap, you want it to be accurate, and you want it to be fast and simple. Let me tell you that you cannot have them all. So we then have to say, okay, we have to give up something for performance or access or cost. So if you think about very sophisticated laboratory tests, it's very accurate, but it's neither cheap nor fast and simple. Although the fast and simple is getting to be a characteristic of some of these sophisticated tests now. When you think about EIA, that could be used at lower levels of the healthcare system, it's less accurate, but it's cheaper and simpler to do. And then now with a lot of these strip tests, we're coming to a point where the tests can be done anywhere. Excuse me. And perhaps we have to trade off some of the accuracy for the speed with which we could get the results. And we wanted, if we wanted to continue to buy a test for 50 cents, we cannot expect a Cadillac. So now, what are some of the tests that we have been using as a rapid test? For example, there's a chlamydia test that's widely used in about 30 countries around the world for a chlamydia diagnosis or screening. But when we compared it to PCR, we found that, especially with a vaginal swab, the sensitivity was only 33%. So really, for a screening test, when we want high sensitivity, this is not very good. It's far from ideal. And plus, for antigen detection tests, like this particular test, there are a number of steps where you have to process the specimen before you could put it into the cassette. So in this particular test, even though the company says there are only three steps, because we specify in our Assure criteria three steps or so, but in fact, when you break it down, it's about seven steps. And so we tried it out actually in Alberta at an abortion clinic, and it wouldn't work because there are too many steps, and the nurses just cannot go away for 2 minutes, come back and do the next step, and it was very, very difficult as a point of care test when you have a very busy clinic. Similarly, for rapid gonorrhea tests, we had two evaluations when I was at WHO, one in Brazil at an STD clinic and one in Benin with Michel Allery and his team there. And we found that on the whole, these tests, were the sensitivity was between 60 to 70%. Usually the specificity of these antigen detection tests are fine, but again, the steps, there are many steps, and the one on the left in particular actually takes about 14 steps, and it's a huge box like this, and many bottles, and you can make a lot of mistakes doing this. And so so this is the way it is. And of course, we found many, many of these strip tests that we found this particular one in a sex shop in Shanghai. Well, I don't ask me why we were there, but anyway. And we found many of these that have a CE mark. But, so this particular one was actually, we actually put a million bacteria onto the strip and it didn't turn color at all. And so it was a total waste of time and money. And I think there was another one that has a CE mark that's being sold in Europe, and Helen Lee's lab evaluated it and found it, the sensitivity, to be only 12%, and that was a chlamydia test. And so just don't believe everything you read in the product insert. There's a rapid test for trichomonas. The performance is pretty good, and I think it's gone through several sort of iterations and been bought by different companies. So this is a very sort of moving target, all these rapid tests for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and trichomonas. There's been about 25 rapid tests for syphilis that we found available on the market. And on the whole, with blood-based rapid tests, it's fairly simple. You put a drop of blood on, and then you put a chase buffer on, and you could read the result in 15 minutes or so. And it's fairly easy to do and quite easy to read. And the control, I must say, the control line is not a control line for syphilis. It's a control line to show you that the specimen has migrated across the strip. And that it gives you, if the control line is there, it can give you, you can now read the result. And if there's no control line, it meant that either the specimen didn't migrate through the strip for whatever reason. Sometimes the cassettes are too tight, or that there's too much fat in the blood, and the migration doesn't take place very well. So these tests are fairly easy to do. There's been systematic reviews of test performance of six brands, six out of the 20-some brands, and the performance on the whole is pretty good. The median sensitivity compared to a treponemo test, TPPA, is around 80 to 90%, and the specificity is between 96 to 99%. So I think as a screening test, this is good in terms of being able to trade off some of the performance for the ease of use. And these all cost around 50 cents or so. And so because of the ease of use of these syphilis tests and the higher performance compared to chlamydia and gonorrhea tests, then we were actually funded by the Gay Foundations to start implementing them and see what we find. But in the meantime, we wanted to have a rapid test that allow us to make a more specific diagnosis for syphilis. Because with only a treponemo test, you're only picking up people who've ever been had a history of syphilis or that who are acutely infected. You wouldn't be able to differentiate who has an active infection. So the ChemBio has a non-treponemo test that they developed. And it's looking pretty good. This is a CDC evaluation by Arnold Castro, it's been published since 4 years ago. The concordance with RPR and TPPA were really good. So this is a pipeline. Maureen Matard, who's CEO of our International Diagnostic Center in London, was funded by the Gates Foundation to look at what is available. And so there are three rapid tests already available, and then there are a number of them still in the pipeline for dual HIV syphilis test. And you could see that a lot of these are either strip tests or they could be read in a machine, like the microfluidic test that's here, and this one here with MBio. Just a word about these dual syphilis tests. The evaluations are ongoing, but some of the early results show that they are as good as the single test for either HIV or syphilis. And in this particular case, it's the standard diagnostic test. The WHO had already endorsed their HIV as well as their syphilis test. They're in bulk procurement. And so this dual test we found, when it's put into combination, actually works pretty well. Now, this microfluidic test, I wanted to show this because in 2011, when this was published by the concept of this microfluidic test was published in Nature Medicine, there was a lot of press release around this that it's very simple, very easy to make, very cheap to make, and you could insert it into a machine, which means that the data could be transmitted to a central database very easily. And it eliminates the subjectivity of having to look and to see is the line there or not. You know, there's a lot of, there's very little interpretation that's needed. And but unfortunately, this is still not on the market. Now, for chlamydia and gonorrhea, we now, for duplex tests, we have the GeneXpert platform. I think there's been a lot of publicity around this, so I don't need to say more about it. The nice thing about this kind of platform is that there's random access, which is really great, and then you could also have a remote quality control as well. And they have a huge menu of tests they will put on. Now, about the connectivity, I think that for much of the developing world, having a connectivity, data transmitted to a central database allows us to have information not only on what's happening in each particular location when the testing has been decentralized, But we really can also use it to look at surveillance in real time. We could tie it to supply chain software so that there's every test result that comes in means one test has been used at the site. And so as many of you who had worked in developing countries know that supply chain and stockout is a major problem. So there are many, many advantages to having data connectivity. So even for the strip test, there are companies that now have these mobile apps that you could load up on your phone, and you could take a picture of the test on your phone, and it will help you with the interpretation right there on the phone. And so even for strip tests, you could take the subjective element out of the test. There are isothermal amplification assays, such as this one made by U-Star in China. They said that this test will come out in the next one or two years. It requires no equipment, just a little cassette to read the results. There's a multiplex molecular test using biochips that could look at all these 10, I think it's 10 STIs, with a single specimen, 25 microliter sample, 22 assays per chip run, and 45 samples. But think about one sample you want to be, I don't think you could look for all these STIs from one sample, whether it's a blood sample or a swab, right? So there's some problems with this one, but they said they want to make a point-of-care test out of this biochip and sell it in Boots in England in the pharmacy chains. There's a point-of-care diagnostics initiative that's funded by Grand Challenges Canada as well as the Gates Foundation, and they want to fund the development of generic platforms for detection so that companies only have to make individual tests that would work with these platforms, these generic platforms. And so it's all to do with making tests more accessible and cheaper. The idea is like you could buy a memory stick from any shop or any brand and it will fit into any computer. It's that kind of interoperability. New nano sort of technologies. There's a company that makes a test for malaria with nanowire technology. With one drop of blood, you could tell in 20 minutes whether there's malaria parasites in the blood, what species it is, and all the major drug resistance patterns. And so I wish that for GC, but it's still to be validated. There are nanodots that have the similar sort of capability for us to actually use color detection to know whether different antigens are, or different nucleic acids are present. But these are still in development for maybe to come for the next few years. So I want to quickly go through with you the seven country studies that we were funded to do by the Gates Foundation. In each country, we try to look at feasibility, cost effectiveness of introducing rapid tests into an area where there's low coverage for antenatal screening. And we did manage to do this, but there's and we prepared a toolkit that allows countries to do their introduction, including quality assurance. When you decentralize rapid tests, testing out of the lab, quality control is really important. Quality assurance is very important. And so it was really thanks to all the PIs. Some of them are in the room, like Adele Van Sacken and Patty Garcia and her team. They're in the room. Thanks to their work, it was very successful. Here we show the First Lady of Zambia getting a toolkit, our toolkit from our PI in Zambia, and the Premier of China announcing a change in policy to incorporate rapid testing into their control programs. And we had a visit just a year ago to look at whether all the sites are still doing syphilis testing in Peru, and happily they are. And our project was actually written up in the World Health Report as an example of how to do implementation research that can rapidly translate into policy change. But some of the lessons that we learn are really, really quite concerning in terms of being able to roll out rapid tests. And one of them is actually the subjective interpretation of a test result. And here I show a paper that we Adele wrote up for looking at the same nurse and nurse practitioners that have been trained to read rapid tests for HIV and syphilis. They tend to call a positive for syphilis much more readily than they do for HIV, just because of the implications. It's so much more serious if they call a positive. So the concordance of the results, if you see here, is 44% for HIV, but over 80% for syphilis. So that's a concern, and that's why we think that we have to take that subjective element out of the reading. And so the lessons we have learned is that when you have a change in policy to incorporate something that is so unusual, taking testing out of the lab, you really need to advocate to the highest level to commit to this. You must have a very strong quality systems approach to policy framework and look at where to place those technologies. The technical support from the lab is really important, and the training, and then reviewing patient pathways. You need to change patient pathways to maximize the benefit of a rapid test, which is not often done. And then the data connectivity, all the advantages of that. And then the bottom line is always the money. We need to look at innovative ways to fund the test purchase. And this is my final slide. The monitor is showing me 0 minutes. I'd just like to say that in summary, we already have some experience with rapid tests for HIV. Fourth generation. I think for syphilis, we're still at the first generation for most of the STI tests. So we still have a long ways to go, but we've learned some hard lessons. And we like countries to have a consistent policy on point-of-care tests, whether it's for HIV, whether it's for STIs, TB, et cetera. There should be a consistent, strong policy for how to deal with point-of-care tests, how to strategically place them, the training, the role of the lab, because there's been always a fight between the labs and the point-of-care testing programs. And I think that we have some, with the data connectivity, we have the means of overcoming some of the problems with stockouts, and we can strengthen healthcare systems with it. And we need financing. Thank you very much.